Possibility, courageous, resilient.
Hi, everyone. This is Heather Vickery, and you have tuned in to the Brave Files podcast. I'm so happy to have you here with me today. I want you to imagine for a moment. Imagine growing up on the streets, in and out of foster care, and literally living on the streets for a great majority of your teenage life, still trying to go to high school, do normal kid things. And then I want you to imagine deciding that this was both the worst and the best thing that could have ever happened to you. Well, today's guest says just that. Tanya Marie Dubay joined me to talk about discovering herself and her own superpowers through reflecting on her painful, painful childhood. We dug right in on topics like creating your future self. Hint, start now. Not saving celebration, trusting your instincts, deeply taking responsibility for yourself and for your life by not co-creating negative situations. It's a very powerful conversation. We do talk about some really hard things. There's some abuse and some other stuff. So I want to just give you a tiny little warning on that so you can be prepared before you listen. But it is overall just a magical conversation about possibility, awareness, trusting yourself, learning who you are and how you're going to move through the world. I know you're going to love it. But before we start, I have to share some really exciting news with you. I have officially opened up applications for my brand new program. It is the penultimate program that I have ever produced in my entire coaching career called the Brave Entrepreneur Incubator. This is a 16-week program, and it is specifically designed for people who are deeply and truly ready to elevate, expand, and empower themselves, both personally and professionally. It's for people who are no longer willing to accept the unacceptable, to believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that the best growth doesn't happen alone. It happens when you have a good support system, right? Does that sound like you? Could that maybe be you? Inside the incubator, we will combine systems and strategies, including my powerful Brave method, as well as some heart-centered work around self-compassion, forgiveness, surrender, and have a powerful community, accountability, support, your own personal cheering squad, and a group of people who won't let you bullshit yourself. If this excites you or interests you, then head on over to vickeryandco.com/incubator to get all of the details and apply to join us. I cannot wait. I cannot wait to share all of this with you. Okay, brave ones, let's meet Tanya Marie. You're listening to The Brave Files, where we share stories from people who've stepped out of fear and into bravery in every possible way. What we know for sure is that when we choose bravely on purpose, we choose bigger, we win bigger, and it's contagious. It's our hope that these stories connect with you and encourage you to embrace bravery in every possible way, day after day. Together, we can build a movement that enriches both our lives and our communities. The Brave Files is brought to you by Vickery & Co., a success and leadership coaching firm dedicated to helping you build a life and a business that you are absolutely in love with. Vickery & Co. offers group programs, membership communities, one-on-one coaching, VIP days, corporate trainings, workshops, keynote speaking, and so much more. Visit vickeryandco.com to get all the details. Today's guest is Tanya Marie Dubay, and she says that growing up in foster homes and living on and off the streets from the ages of 12 up for 6 whole years was both a blessing and, of course, the worst thing that could have ever happened to her. As a mother, I'm telling you, that is just even hard to hear before we've heard this whole story. But I know that for Tanya, while life was challenging during that time, she now sees her experience as the foundation for who she is, and she's grateful for the experiences and lessons that have brought her here. The truth is, none of us would be where we are without the experiences we've had in the past. These days, Tanya is, and is it Tanya or Tanya Marie?
Tanya's fine, yeah.
Okay, very good. We'll just keep that in, folks. You heard real life right there. These days, Tanya is the founder of the Wealthy Mindset Mentor and the creator of the Your First Million Dollar Year Summit, which I had the privilege of being a guest speaker on. Tanya, welcome to the Brave Files.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to be here too. So we met because you reached out to me to support your it's a summit, right? We're calling it
a summit. Yep. A 5-day summit. Yep.
Yeah. Your first million dollar year, which I don't know very many people who don't want to have that experience. That's pretty exciting. And as we were chatting, you kind of just dropped like just a few tidbits. And I'm like, oh, you are so interesting. You have such an interesting background with embracing bravery and learning and all of that. And I knew I really wanted to have you here with us to share your story with our listeners. So again, I said this in the intro, as the mother of four, the idea of any child being in the foster care system breaks my heart. But the age of 12, I have a 12-year-old. She's fully into her life. Would you be willing to share with us what your life was like prior to this and what led you into the foster care system?
Yeah, sure. So, well, I was born into the foster care system. So I basically lived in 7 homes before I was 2 years old.
Oh, wow.
My mother had issues with drugs and alcohol most of her teenage life. She was also in and out of the foster care system. And so I think everybody thought it was in my best interest to not be living with her full time. So at the age of 2, I went to go live with a foster family who kept me from 2 years old until I was 10. And they were grandparents' age, and, you know, those were my formidable years. You know, I was a sponge in those years, and I was very blessed to have them. They were a foster family who took in lots of children. I was only supposed to be there for a couple of weeks, and I ended up latching on to my foster father. Apparently, as the story goes, as soon as I saw him, I ran into his arms. And then they just decided to keep me. And so every single year, when you're in the foster care system, they try not to get you too attached to any one set of parents, which is horrible, right? In its own way. So they move you around often. That's why kids often get shuffled around through the foster care system. So I call them my grandparents because I grew up with their grandchildren. My nanny and my papa, they used to go to court every single year to fight for me to keep me there. And of course, I'd have to have a conversation with a judge and I'd have to talk about why I really loved it there and so on and so forth. At the age of 10, my mother got married to my stepfather, and they together were both very violent. He was a pedophile. Oh, I know, it was pretty bad. It was a very, very violent household. And at 12 years old, I had $18 in my pocket. And yeah, I just decided to leave. I remember standing at the door. It's a little graphic, should I tell you?
You can. Well, just warning, this section is a little bit graphic. If somebody wants to forward through it, we fully understand. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't be too graphic, but I'll just say that my mother had just beaten me up. I was 12, and I was standing at the front door, and I was very badly beat up, and I was looking outside, and I remember her saying, "If you leave, you better run, because if I catch you, I'll kill you."
Oh, my God.
I know. And so I went up the stairs. I had $18 saved underneath my mattress. I put it in my pocket and I came back downstairs and I stood at the door and I looked over at her and I just bolted. And she came running after me down the street, and that was it. I just ran for my life.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was the beginning of 12 years old. So that was a really trying year for me. 12 years old was very, very difficult being on my own. I've slept under trees, and I've slept in church bathrooms and in cars, and I've snuck in every window of every friend I ever had to sleep under their bed or in their closet, or, you know, just trying not to be found out. My biggest goal, my biggest objective as a child going through all of this was to continue school. I was a straight A student from the word go. I heard someone call me a statistic when I was very young. I looked it up, decided that was not going to be me. You know, so I was very into my education. If I got a 98% on something, I was very hard on myself. So for me, getting through school was the most important thing for me. And then, of course, as I got bigger physically, you know, I turned more into a young woman. It was very difficult and dangerous for me to keep trying to live the way that I was living. So that's when I decided to quit school. on my exit interview, I needed to wait until I was 16 so that they couldn't keep shuffling me through the foster care system. I knew this. So when I turned 16 years old, I went to my guidance counselor at school and I said, you know, it's time for me to go. This is the situation I've been living with. I can't do this anymore. I'm physically too big to be sneaking into people's houses, you know, or to be hiding under trees or whatever, right? Like, I just was like, I can't live like this anymore. So I quit. And when I was leaving, he handed me this university 101 textbook on psychology. And he was like, you know, you got to read this book. And I said, to be perfectly honest with you, I've been in therapy my whole life. I think I'm good. And he said, just take it, Tanya, just take it. So I took it. And now fast forward a little bit, I've got an apartment. I have no furniture, but I have a roof over my head and I'm so happy. And I'm sitting on my floor and I'm eating something I got for takeout. I have a job. And I have a little table and it has a pink ghetto blaster on it and it had all my tapes and there's this psychology book. So I'm sitting in my kitchen and I'm looking at it and I'm kind of like, oh, this thing is calling out to me almost on a daily basis. I'm just going to read it. So I started to read it cover to cover, not really understanding what I was reading, but I was started to read it cover to cover. And then I would go out into the world and I would discover somebody who had a problem that I just read about and how to solve it. Mm. And so I started to teach as a way for me to also instill it into my subconscious, like into who I was. I was right. determined. At this point, I was meeting strangers who, you know, were telling me their, you know, their misgivings, or they would tell me about their life. And I had this information to help them, and I couldn't believe how it felt. Like, I'd never been through that before. I'd never thought of myself as able to help anybody. That's now, let me just go back a little bit and say, you know, growing up the foster care system in my neighborhood, everybody knew I was a foster kid. And so what was really kind of weird but fascinating is that adults used to tell me about their adversity when I was just like 8 years old.
Just something about you.
Yeah. So this has been going on for a long time for me. But back then I would go to bed at night thinking, oh my gosh, how are these people going to pay their rent, or how are they going to feed their kids, or they're not going to have Christmas. I get to have Christmas, you know, like it was always stuff like that. So now fast forward,
that's a lot to manage as a little kid.
I know. I thought so too.
It's unfair to have that. Do you mind if we go back just a little? I know people are listening and I know. And I guess I want to be respectful. If it is too difficult for you to talk about, if you're feeling too many big feelings, I don't want to pressure you. But you literally like lived on your own on the streets from 12 to 16. Like there was no
12 to 18.
12 to 18.
And it was on and off. Like I'd get help from people, right? So at 14 years old, I had to move wherever my mom and my stepdad moved because they were my legal guardians. I live in Canada, so I wasn't allowed to live in any province if my mother didn't physically live there. If I ran away and I moved to a different province, the police would come and get me and they would bring me back.
And take you back.
So sometimes they would just decide to move. They probably planned it for whatever amount of time, but for me it was, I had a day's notice. I'd have to move to a new city and then they would drop me off somewhere or kick me out of the house. I wouldn't even know where to go. And that was my new life. So at 14, this happened to me and I got placed into a group home in Ontario. And so there I was only supposed to be there for 2 weeks and I was lucky to be there for a whole year. And then it went right back to living on the street again because they moved and then they kicked me out and that was it.
So you would have to move with them in order to avoid being given back to them, right? And so when you would move with them, you did live with them for a minute until they got mad.
It was usually like a day or two. I'd start up at a new school and then I'd come home and my stuff would be in garbage bags sitting on the front step. Like they just didn't want to be parents. But I struggled for so long to understand why that. You know, like, why do it that way? And as a parent now, it's really difficult for me to think, oh, my God, like, I can't even imagine putting my child in that position.
No way. Has there ever been an opportunity for you to ask that question or have closure?
No, my stepdad died not too long ago. Well, I think it's probably 10 years. I don't even think about him, really. But my mom passed away. It's over 20 years now. Wow. I never got to really ask her anything. I don't know, you know, when someone, I think, goes through so much adversity themselves and they're struggling so much to figure out who they are as people, I think it's hard for them to imagine themselves as the bad guy. Mm. I can't say for everybody, but that was my experience with my mother. And so I think it was on her deathbed. I wasn't there for that, but on her deathbed where she wanted my aunt to tell me she's very sorry. Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I think that's very common, right?
When you know
you're not long for the earth to want to make
amends in some way.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that, you know, I think when I was going through it at the time, it was really hard. Like at 12 years old, I found myself sitting behind a church wanting to end my life, you know, and then you make it through. Like at 12 years old, I heard a voice say, and I'm a very spiritual person now. I'm not a religious person, but I'm a very spiritual person now. I heard a voice that said, just hold on till you're 18. Just wait till you're 18. And I thought, oh my God, that's 6 years away, 6 years of this. Like how am I supposed to do that? And I don't know. I just trusted that I would figure it out, I guess. I was a pretty resourceful kid. I grew up in foster care. It's not that it's not like I was sheltered my whole life, right? So
how do you, I mean, is it, if you were to look back, which of those survival skills do you count on today? Like, is it like just knowing that 1 minute at a time, 1 hour at a time, like you're going to get through it, like when things really suck, like what shows up for you now from that experience?
Oh my goodness. So, well, this is how I could walk out of an almost 20-year marriage with my two children and no job and no idea what I was going to do. You know, it was scary. It took me almost that long to leave, right? I should have left after 3 years in this relationship. Yeah. I stayed that long. We had children together. I tried to make it work. This is the thing. I know that at the end of the day, everything works out the way it's supposed to. If my belief is that I can do it, then my energy is that I can do it. Then my actions is that I can do it. So that, I mean, it's resourcefulness. It's knowing that even though it is so hard, it will work out. You know, if your heart is in the right place and it's really what you want to do, you'll find a way. I mean, you'll find a way. And most people will wait until they have no choice. I suggest you don't do that.
Right. I mean, I think you're right. A lot of people do wait until they absolutely don't have a choice. And maybe for many, it's because they don't have the lived experience that you can create change before you have to. And then sometimes we stay. You said it yourself. You stayed in that marriage longer than you should. So sometimes our ability to suck it up and get through doesn't serve us either.
Oh, man. I could not for the life of me. It had me really worried for a really long time. I knew how to take care of myself really well. Did I know how to also take care of two children that were small? I was like, oh, my Lord. I waited until I couldn't wait anymore. You know, like I couldn't imagine myself as a single mother with a baby and a 6-year-old. You know what I mean? Like, I just couldn't. That was too much for me to handle, for me personally. I know there's loads of women who are like, I'm out. I'll figure it out from that young age. And I just, for me, it felt like it was so overwhelming. I had to at least wait until my son was 5.
I understand. Yeah. And we're all on our journey. We're all on our own journey.
Yeah.
Really is what it is. So,
yeah.
But I agree with you that everything works out. Like it's always divine timing, and it doesn't often feel that way. I find for me, it can feel really shitty, and then we can still know that what's meant for us will find us.
Yeah.
But that's hard to even want to be true when you're a kid on the streets, right? Or when you're in an abusive relationship, or when you're grieving something. Like, you're like fuck you. Right? Like, well, what do you mean what's meant for me will find me? Like,
oh my Lord.
I don't want this.
I honestly, one thing that I learned from when I was really, really little, like my papa, my foster dad, he used to always say, you know, just trust. Mm. And I remember, you know, because we'd be talking about my mother. My mother would sometimes come get me. Most of the time she would forget about me, you know. And so he would say, just trust that everything is fine. Just hold, you know, like just hold it in your heart. Everything is fine. And, you know, one step at a time. Don't worry about what's going to happen next weekend. You know, don't worry about what's going to happen, you know, down the road. Just right now is what you got. So what are you going to do with right now? And I remember holding on to that when I was going through all of that craziness, just one thing at a time. And it's something that helps me now. And sure, yeah, I can forget that sometimes, like everybody else, and, you know, like overwhelm myself with too much to do, or in my business, or, you know, running my home. And I can get overwhelmed when I start thinking, you know, down the road, because we're planning. But always, when you start getting into that overwhelm, take some deep breaths and just ask yourself what you can do right now, in this one moment, just one thing at a time, you know, and then just tackle that thing.
I love that. So you dropped out of school at 16 because the back and forth and the moving and all of that. What happens between 16 and 18?
So 16 to 18, I was wild. I was an untamed child. I was making more money than all my friends. You know, it was probably, I don't know, $30,000 or $35,000 a year.
May I ask how?
Yeah. So I started off serving. Like, I was waitressing. Okay. So I wasn't making that kind of money with that. But right away at 17 years old, I got a job. I had some regulars in this coffee shop that I worked at, and they were all construction workers. And so they asked me if I'd be interested in a receptionist job. And I was like, yeah, okay. All you old guys are asking a 17-year-old girl, she wants to work as a receptionist in your business. I was like, is there really a business? So
right.
I ignored
them. Did you feel safe? Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I ignored them for a while. I mean, I've always been very talkative with people. So I've never been afraid of people, even men. I've never been afraid of men, really. When I was little, a little bit more so, but now no. But I ignored them for so long. And then finally, one day they were like, really, we do really have this position. We're going to fill it. Are you interested or not? And I said, okay, let me come by and see. So I needed to make sure that it was legitimate, and it was legitimate. So I said, yes. So I took this job.
How
and lucky. Divine timing, right?
Divine timing.
And so this was the job that gave me my first bit of money that I was able to know that I could pay my rent and have food on the table, even though I couldn't cook to save my life. I had the money to buy takeout.
There you go.
Which was good. And it was fun, and it was great. And then at 17 years old, I backpacked through Western Alberta. And at 18, I backpacked across the country.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's fascinating. Have you ever heard the term just sort of, I also am spiritual and not religious, but this like touched sort of thing. Like, you had this terrible experience, and yet something was clearly protecting you.
I know. Oh, I think about this all the time. You know, I just had this morning I was interviewing for my show, and I was having this conversation about intuition and how guided I have been by my intuition my entire life. Like, not even, I don't know. I've always listened to that voice, you know, that has said, you know, like, watch out. Like, I'll give you a really good example. When I was 14 years old and I lived in that group home, one of the things that, you know, all the counselors who worked there were absolutely amazing. And one of the women that used to take care of me, named Allison, she used to always say, what I want you to practice is awareness when you're walking down the street. Don't take the same route twice. Just don't. Try to find fun in taking a different route. It's okay to get lost. You'll find your way out. You know how to ask questions. Don't worry about that. So one day, not thinking, I'd left the group home for school. I was running a little bit late, forgot something. I had to run back to go get it. And I came back the same way. And I'm walking down the street, and I saw down the road, you know, I lived in Windsor, Ontario at the time. And Windsor is a car factory town. So if you can imagine, everything can be kind of spread out there, right? And it's not too busy. So I'm walking down this kind of lonely road, and across the street is this like weird building. It's like in the middle of a whole parking lot. And it looks like a coffee shop or an ice cream shop or something. And my intuition told me to go over there. And there was an old man standing outside, this older African man, and he was smoking a cigarette. And I said to him, do you know what time it is? I don't even know why I said that. I was told to say that, so I said this. And so he said, you know, your boyfriend's following you. And I said, my boyfriend. And I went to turn around. He's like, don't do that. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, you should probably come inside with me. And some of my friends were sitting at a table. Why don't we act like we all know each other? And I literally looked at him and I said, you're not letting me look behind, but you want me to go into this building with you? Are you going to kill me in here? Like, I was just like, what?
Yeah.
So he said, do you trust me? And I was like, yeah, I do. I felt totally safe with him. And I went in, I sit down with all these old grandpas and they're all playing cards. The man sits down and he's like, everybody, we're going to pretend like we know her. She's being followed. So this crazy man comes up to the window of the shop and puts his hands around his eyes and he looks right up against the glass and he's staring right at me. And this man that I was with said that he saw him following me from way down the road. Wow. So anyhow, so the man wasn't leaving. He was standing outside. He looked really crazy and scary. I didn't know what I was going to do. And so the old man who had asked me to go in with him told the lady at the front counter to call me a cab and they were going to pay for it, have them come to the back door and I could leave. Like, it was so crazy. And so there's stuff like this that has happened to me my whole life. Don't go over there. Stay over here. Hide yourself. Don't talk to that person. It's time to leave. Where's the exit? Like, all of this stuff constantly. Yeah. So I follow it to a T.
Yeah. Do you know your human design type? Have you done?
Yeah. I'm a 5-1.
So that's your profiling. Do you know what type you are?
No, I don't.
That's okay.
I did this the other day. Someone asked me and I found out 5-1.
It's funny. I just pulled somebody else's chart as a 5-1 this morning. People are listening. We're like, what? You guys, I'm getting certified in human design and it is game changing. And intuitively, it was also one of those things where I saw it and I was like, I need to know this. And now I'm learning about it. But there are, I'm super curious. Maybe when we're done, you'll let me pull or view your chart.
Yes.
I'm wondering if you have either a splenic or a sacral authority, which is how decision making, your authority is your decision making. Mm. And I have splenic, which is like instant hits of listen to this. This is here for you. Whereas sacral is just a constant knowing a yes or no. And so I'm practicing learning.
Oh, you can practice on me for sure. I love it.
But you know, it sounds like we're aligned in that way. I find myself in situations that I'm not sure how I ended up there or why I'm pursuing this or traveling this route. And as I learn, I teach and I share. And so I think that's very similar to what you've done.
Yeah, we sound
the
same.
You left high school, but you clearly got, I don't know what the Canadian equivalent of a GED is.
Yeah, a GED. Yep.
It's the same thing.
Yep,
okay, same thing. Very good. And then you went into university to study psychology. Yeah?
Oh my Lord, I never thought that was the biggest dream in the world for me. It almost makes me emotional thinking about it because it was everything for me to be able to go. I'm looking right at you and I see the look in your face. It's making me emotional.
I'm sorry.
No,
it is a beautiful moment to witness this. It's joy.
It is joy.
You all could see it. It's joy. It's almost wonder at doing. I call myself a creator of unrealistic dreams, an achiever of unrealistic dreams.
That.
And I feel that for you in this moment. I see it on you.
I had a cat. It all started with my cat. And my cat was my beloved cat. And I was working during the day as an agent for actors. I'm an actor myself, professionally trained actor. And I was working as an agent for actors. I was 24 years old and working for $10 an hour, but I loved the job so much. Then my cat fell off my balcony, was missing, broke his leg, and needed to have massive surgery. And I was like, how in the world am I going to be able to afford this $3,500 surgery on a $10 an hour job?
Yeah.
So I was like, I need another job. So for the longest time, you know, I said I got into like administrative work at 17 years old. I knew how to do that. So I looked for a job that I could do that and keep my day job just as an extra job to pay. And I found working in a law firm at night in Toronto, they work around the clock. So I was like, I can do that.
Makes sense.
So now I have this job, I pay for the surgery and I'm like, hold on a second. This is my ticket to go to school. So I ended up going to school. So I was working from 5 o'clock at night. This is going to blow your mind. 5 o'clock at night at this job until 2 in the morning. And I was at school at 8 in the morning and supposed to be until 5, but I had to run at 4:30 to get to my 5 o'clock job. Take a quick 5-minute nap. I'm like the queen of 5-minute naps and then get into my night. Right. And so I kept this job for 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Three years at one law firm, 1 year at another law firm to finish. And yeah.
What are you thinking at this time in your life? Are you just sort of in a do phase, a creator, like I'm going to do the thing phase? Or like, what are you thinking?
I'm always like that. I'm going to do phase constantly. I'm always like this. But what I was thinking was, oh my gosh, this is like a gift. This is like the biggest gift in the world. I was so grateful to be able to go to school during the day. I mean, when did I ever think this was ever going to be possible for me? And then go, you know, and then go to work at night at this prestigious law firm, you know, where I was making really good money too. And my that money just paid for my school and my rent. I was eating out of plastic bags, salads everywhere I went with like chicken and strawberries. I get to eat chicken and strawberries.
Right? I mean, not like a processed potato chip out of a bag. Like you were.
So just so grateful. Just so grateful to even have the opportunity, because I can't even tell you. It was just a dream for me. You know, so I went to two different schools. I've got a couple of different things under my belt now and, you know.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, you also have a master's in metaphysical sciences. So here
I'm getting my master's.
I'm
working
master's.
On it right now. Yep.
Okay. Well, so it's fascinating. And I always have, I'm curious if you have something like this, a universal rule of three. When something shows up for me three times, the universe is like, get off your fucking ass, Heather, and do this thing now. And I have been playing with getting a PhD in metaphysical science.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I've been looking into it. It came to me. I did my own research. Then when I was opening and closing keynote speaker for a conference in Mexico a couple of weeks ago, and it came up in conversation there. And then when I saw it on your bio, I was like, oh, shit.
I'm going to go for the PhD in metaphysical sciences. I think you should do it if you're called
to
do it.
Where are you studying this?
University of Metaphysical Sciences. Yeah, they're out of Arizona.
Sedona? Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what I'm looking at.
They're amazing. I love it there. It's taken me a few years now. I think I started in 2019, and I do it where I can do it. You know, like it's now more than ever do I feel the call to completely finish this. I mean, I went through an entire bachelor's, and I've started my master's now, and I did that in 3 years, which is pretty cool. So I shortened that a little bit. You know, I am an overachieving person. Do I think I could have done it sooner? Sure.
Well, but you didn't need to, right?
No.
Because it's always divine timing.
It's always divine timing. And when I was younger, this is one of the lessons from my childhood I learned, is that I think that overachiever in me and that needing to get those grades was because I needed to prove that I was worth it, you know? And I don't need to prove anything like that anymore either. So I trust the divine timing of my life, and you know, I believe in everything happening when it's supposed to happen. I still take action on everything, but I'm not controlling it, and I'm not married to the outcome. You know, like I got to let it unfold the way it's supposed to unfold and get out of my own way that way. You know, that's good. That's good for me.
I love that. I love that. That is, yes, that's beautiful. It's probably our pull quote for the episode. I'm taking all these notes. I'm like, oh, that one's good. That one's good. That one's good. No, I love it. Okay, so fast forwarding now, you do this work. I mean, I have to be honest, I can't, somebody listening is thinking, and this is your story, so I hope this comes up the right, bullshit that you went through all of that trauma as a kid and you're glad, right? Mm-hmm. Like, no way, nobody would want that. And I don't know that that's what you're saying. I don't think that's,
no,
like
that's
you would
a very-
pick it.
That's a very good question. Okay. Yeah. Do you want to finish your question?
Yeah. No, well, I mean, I think it's like, but you're using it. It is what happened. It's not that if you could go back and pick something, I don't know. You can tell us. Yeah.
I think one of the most liberating things for me, so there's two parts to that. Okay. So I'll start with the first part. The first part is that it took me until I was 40 years old to get over it. I had a massive chip on my shoulder. I didn't know what I was doing. I got myself in the wrong relationship with, you know, another situation that was not good for me. You know, like I made one bad choice after the next with relationships my whole entire life. I surrounded myself with a lot of narcissistic energy. I played into that. I co-created that. I participated in it. I mean, I had to face a lot of things at 40 when I was like, that's it. I've had enough of the way I've been living my life, and it's time for me to get my shit together. I can't even tell you how ready I was for that, because there was only two options. My life wasn't going to continue.
Wow.
Or I was going to change it. And I knew that I could change it. That's the thing, because there's proof. There's always proof around us that we can change our lives, right? Like if we look for it, it's there. And I've done it so many times. So I was like, you know what? I've had enough of this. This isn't me. I remember waking up thinking this cannot possibly be my life. Yet I've participated in the entire creation of this life. Right. So what have I been asking for? That's when I started my spiritual path. I'm 47 years old now. Started my spiritual path. I started to really ask myself some very tough questions, and I had to. That's where I came up with that. You know, I've wholeheartedly 100% participated in the making of this life that I do not want. And that's okay. That's got to be okay, because now I'm going to take the steps to learn, you know, how to change it and how to become the better version of myself so that I can do these great things that I want to do. And I can, you know, be a person of value in my own heart, you know? So that's when everything changed for me. It was the fetal position. I'm telling you, it was like crying a lot. It was really hard. Second part to that is, would I want all those things to happen to me? No, my stepfather was a sexual predator. I mean, it's, you know, the two of them together is the reason I was on the street. All of that was so hard, but I can't go back and change it. So for me, what I have to do is have gratitude for the experience, just because it made me who I am now. Without all of those things, I mean, really everything that we are is a culmination of everything that we've learned. It's all the conditioning around us. It's, you know, it's the bad stuff and the good stuff. And if you remove those labels, it's just experiences and lessons. And, you know, these are things that I need to help the audience that I have. Like in my work, every single thing that I can bring to the table about overcoming adversity, taking responsibility, being accountable for what I choose to do next, all of this has changed the lives of so many people. So, you know, am I happy that stuff happened to me? No.
Yeah.
Did it serve a greater purpose? Absolutely. So yeah. I have to look at it that way. You know, I was going to say before.
Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, thank you. I was quickly going to say before, one of the most liberating things that I could ever figure out when I was little, and this was a gradual, slow burn realization through my life, but then hit me like a ton of bricks at 40. Was that, you know, maybe all of this continued adversity was not for me. Maybe, I don't know, maybe all this continued adversity and all the stuff that I've been through has given me a master's degree in how to do this so that I can help other people figure that out.
Oh, that's profound.
That to me was one of the biggest releases of my entire life, because I thought, oh my gosh, that's my ticket. Like, that's my answer for me. Maybe I'm going through all of this stuff because I'm supposed to help other people. And
that's beautiful.
That's what I do.
Yeah. I mean, that's an amazing segue. That was my next question, was like, what moment, and it sounds like maybe this was it, but at what moment did you decide to take all of this and make it your business? And it's fascinating to me. Like, some people are born with this tenacity and this creativity. It's not going to be everybody's story who grew up on the streets and worked as an administrative assistant, which is a fucking hard job, and I wouldn't want it. I admire the people who do it. I'm super grateful for my administrative assistant. But then to take that and to build your own business and to become an entrepreneur, you know, working with these seven-figure clients and in becoming a wealthy mindset mentor, what brought you there? Because I just don't think that a lot of people can envision that leap.
Well, let me say, so yes, my summit is all about getting to seven figures, but I don't have clients who are in the seven-figure mark yet. That whole thing is born out of a research project of mine wanting to see how to do it. And I thought, I've interviewed over 200 people now. Let's put it online.
Learn out loud. Yeah.
Yeah, learn out loud. But yeah, and working with all those other clients. So it was learning how to really just trust myself and know that if I can think about it, I can create it. Right? If I can see it in my mind, you know, I've always read that we have between 35,000 and 55,000 random thoughts a day, you know, and we can't really control most of those. Most of those thoughts are just things you think all the time anyway. Something like that is what I've heard. But one of the things that I do know is that when we think about something, we think in pictures. We can see things in visuals.
Some people, I am learning that not everyone can do that.
Well, for those who can, I should say me then, because I didn't know that.
it was kind of mind-blowing to discover that not everybody thinks in pictures. So even when I read a book,
oh wow,
it creates a movie in my mind. In fact,
me too.
The other day, I was asking my partner, I'm like, you know, that TV show where there was he was the congressman and he lived with his buddy in D.C. and he dated this girl in California. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then like 10 minutes later, I was like, oh, it was a book. But I was remembering it like a movie. But I have a daughter, and this prompted me to question this, who doesn't. She doesn't read or think in moving pictures. She thinks in colors.
Oh, my daughter's like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she does. My daughter sees in pictures too, but my daughter's like that with colors as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, I should say, if I can imagine it in my mind, you know, a lot of people are visual. When you say do visualizations, they're like, I can't with my eyes closed, and they have to do it with their eyes open.
Yeah.
However, you can see a vision of yourself, even if you do a vision board and you replace the face of the person with your face, just trying to create a picture. However you can see it, if you can see it, you can create it, you know, and our minds don't really understand the difference between something that's happened and something that's going to happen. So
why not physics?
Yeah. Why not fill your mind with like all these possibilities and, you know, like fill your mind with seeing yourself do that thing you want to do every single day and, you know, see yourself having achieved it and get into the energy of what it would feel like to have it. You know, live your life as though you already do have it.
That's right.
You know, stuff like this.
I mean, that's the metaphysical component, right? That's the whole quantum physics bit, is that we are creating the future in this very moment, because in 1 second, it'll be now.
Yeah.
But it won't be in the future. Exactly. Right. So do it. One of the things that I find for folks listening, because I'm with Tanya on this completely. I love visualization. I woke up to them. You guys can hear. I'm doing a lot of work. I'm coaching and teaching and about to release some things on building your first class life, which is self-defined. What your first class life is probably different than mine. And I woke up thinking, yes, in my first class life, I have a house manager who comes in 3 days a week and preps food for the week and does some light cleanup and, you know, runs my errands and stuff, because I have other shit to do. Like, that's not the shit I want to be doing, you know? But all that to say is, maybe lean into, if you can't see it, how would it feel? Because that would work, right? What does it feel to be you in this future you're creating?
Like, can you imagine having the thing that you really want to have? Like, if you think about it, you know, like if you were to think of whoever your big mentor is, or your, you know, the person you look up to, and if you could have their life, you would have it, that kind of person. You know, what do you think it feels like for them to have what they have? And what do you think it would feel like for them if they never pursued their dream? And what if they're helping millions of people? What if your favorite person is Oprah or Tony Robbins or whatever? Ask yourself what their life would be like if they never would have pursued that. You know, all those people, they've affected all those lives. None of that would have ever been achieved. And all for what? For a self-limiting belief?
Yeah, no, right? I hear it. And there's so much around that with intention. So I got to see Oprah keynote speak a conference in 2019, which was life changing. It's actually Oprah and Barack Obama and
I would love that.
Richard Branson. And I mean, it was just all around fucking incredible. But Oprah did this whole thing, and the whole thing was gold, and it was just, you know, pure magic. But she talked about the power of intention, and she told stories about how she ended up being intentional. And she kind of closed by saying, everything I do, from what I wear to what I eat to where I live to who I interview, where I travel, I know why I'm making every decision I make. And you might think that I have the privilege of being intentional because I'm Oprah, but I am here to tell you, I'm Oprah because I chose to be intentional.
What? Oh, I love that. I love her.
Right? I cannot tell that story without getting chills up and down my whole body. I tell it all the time. But to me, that's what you're saying, right? And you, I believe you've done that. Like, when we hear your story, you did visualize, you did imagine and intentionally move towards what you wanted instead of allowing your circumstances to be your story and instead of staying stuck. So now you've moved into supporting other folks. Can you tell us a little bit about this business that you've created and how you help people and what that feels like?
Absolutely. So I started the Wealthy Mindset Mentor as it's a membership where We get to sit together and we get to go through a lot of different things about money blocks, a lot of different things about mindset issues, a lot of personal mm-hmm. development work. And then there's like a sales component to it as well. Sales, I love sales. I needed to have sales somewhere in my work just because I think it's fun and it's exciting. And so, of course, a part of my membership teaches about sales and how to get in front of clients properly. And so we do... this thing where we get together and we get to practice on each other before we go in front of our clients.
Love
you know, we
it.
Get to try on one another some new stuff. And it's the place I wanted it to be like an acting, you know, workshop where we get to come in and we just get to be ourselves and try some new shit. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And if it does work, fantastic. You get to learn off of one another. That was my idea for this. So yeah, so the whole thing is this awesome membership. But the summit series that I end up doing is always just to teach something new. Like that's where my creativity, you know, my intuition will be like, you got to do this right now. Which is how I found you. This was the thing.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, fine. Like, I feel like I'm arguing with someone. Okay, yes, I'll do it.
Like a good old fashioned Google search, right? Like I'll find, I love that.
Yes, yeah, fine. Yeah, yeah.
So, fine, okay, universe, fine. I hear you, I'll do it.
Yeah, so it's like, and then I'll come up with the next one and then we'll just do that one. And that'll be fun because I love the idea of getting a whole bunch of people together who have all these different approaches to the same thing. And then let's just talk. Let's just get it out there and get it in front of as many people as we can. I think that's super fun.
Yeah.
And it's just something that I love to do.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. Well, can you tell people, like in one or two sentences, what is wealthy mindset? Because I think a lot of folks struggle with, they want wealth and money, and we have money issues. Lots of people do. But we want it, most of us, we want it. So when you attach the word mindset to the word wealthy, what are you talking about?
For me personally, I mean, now that you know all about my life, you know, for me being wealthy, it almost has nothing to do with money.
Yeah.
You know, I think that the money stuff, you know, that part of it. And, you know, by the way, I think it's really important to change the way we look at money. You know, yeah. I think the way we look at money and the way that we hold ourselves back from it is why we don't have it.
Absolutely.
But that's a whole other episode maybe. But yeah, to me, being wealthy is all the other areas of your life. Like, you know, can you have conversations without being triggered? Have you done your personal development work? Mm. When you say that you want to have a certain kind of partner in your life, you know, are you that person?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have your list of all the things that you want your partner to be, are you there yet yourself? You know, can you, you know, are you resourceful? Can you throw something together and help yourself? You know, what are your interpersonal relationships like? Like all of that stuff combined means wealth to me. And then if you can add money in there, then you're rich.
Right, like for sure. I love it. Abundance.
My
accountability partner Eddie, who we've worked together as accountability partners for many, many years, he does a daily, twice a day, 5-minute abundance meditation. So all he does is he sets a timer for 5 minutes and imagines himself in his most abundant state. I think it's cool.
That's amazing. I love it.
I don't have a lot of patience. I do EFT tapping meditations, but actual quiet meditation, I'm not there. I need to be moving and talking. But I love EFT tapping. And I use a lot of EFT tapping to break through scarcity mindset stuff and to embrace that abundance mindset. Have you read A Happy Pocket Full of Money?
No, I never have.
Oh my
gosh.
Read it? It's so good.
Making a note.
Yes. I can't remember the name of the author off the
top
of my head.
That's
embarrassing. But it also is not about money. It's about abundance.
Ooh.
And there's a whole quantum physics component with it. I think you would like it very much. One of my favorite things, and I've tacked this on to my daily, about every paragraph the author writes. So of course you're reading, you're either reading it or you're saying it out loud or you're seeing it in your head. I am wealth. I am abundance. I am joy. So for like an entire 350 page book, every minute you're saying, I am wealth. I am abundance.
My gosh.
I am joy.
I love that for so many reasons.
Yeah.
But one of them is, you know, I had this conversation yesterday with somebody. If you see, like, if you put the thing in front of you that you want more than anything in the world, you don't necessarily have to believe it yet that you can have it, and you don't have to necessarily understand how it's going to all come together. But I promise you, if you put that thing in front of you, if you put a picture of that thing and you put pictures of it maybe all over the place, like one of the other speakers on my show, you know, if you put the words that are related to having that thing all around you, and that's all you see every single day, and you're consciously looking at all of these things all over your walls, and you're like, that's me, I'm going to have it, that's mine, it's already happened. You know, like if you're doing that, what are the odds that you're not going to walk away with that thing at the end of the day? I mean, at some point you're going to be taking steps toward it. It's going to get you super excited. You're going to be like, how can I put this thing together? This is so exciting. And if you're doing it to help other people, then you're like, oh my gosh, this is so much fun. I can't wait to get this in front of everybody. Cause it stops being about you. Cause it shouldn't be about you. Right. And then you get to experience this whole other way of living because you've taken the focus off of you and put it on other people.
I love that. I think it's really important to, first of all, I think lots of things should be about us because we have in this patriarchal society that we live in, especially as women, and I know that not all of my listeners are women, but as women, we're so conditioned that to think that nothing should be about us, but also we must be attached to a greater good, to a greater outcome. I think because that's what makes the world go round. That's what gives us a sense of purpose and being. We're not solitary people. We're not designed to be alone on our own in the world. We're designed to support one another. Mm-hmm. So I love that. I love that you're doing that. And this seems like a great opportunity to ask you, how do you like to celebrate? So much to celebrate for you.
I love, you know, being able to afford certain things in my life has always been a dream of mine. You know what? I buy a bottle of Veuve Clicquot.
Yes.
Right?
I only like the good stuff.
My kids and I will pick a spot, like somewhere that we want to go, and we'll just go, you know, for a few days. It's, you know, like we do stuff like this together. Every celebration that I have with my children too. Like we do it all together. Even in building my business, you know, I ask them what their goals are when I achieve my goal too, because we're all working together, you know, so we celebrate a lot of things together. But yeah, that's how I celebrate. But I gotta tell you, I believe in celebrations all the time. I don't wait for something to celebrate.
Absolutely.
That's not to say I drink Veuve Clicquot every day.
Right. Well, so what does that? Yes, because I think those are beautiful, big celebrations. You've accomplished something you've worked hard for, you've set out for. You were super intentional about. But what about those smaller ones? Because I agree. And that's why I ask this question in every episode, because I know for a fact that the more we celebrate, the more we have to celebrate. Mm-hmm. And it builds confidence and community and courage and all of those things. So what about on a small daily basis when just something little happens? How do you acknowledge that and bring that celebration into your life?
I have to go back to the idea, like if you can imagine, you know, what my life was back then, and even when I was unhappy in my marriage, and I'm here now, like where I'm standing now, I look back and I think, holy moly, like I intentionally back then decided that I wanted to create my life so that I could have the time to do what I want to do when I want to do it. And that's how I live my life now. Back then, when I didn't have the luxury of that, I would make the time for things. Like when I had a 9-to-5 job and I was doing administrative work, yeah, for sure. I made sure that my bosses knew, hey, I don't get sick, but I will take those 6 days as personal days. And I will tell you that it's a personal day. And when I need it, I'm going to take it. And they would always say, of course, you know, if I am allowed to have 2 breaks a day, then yeah, I go have 2 breaks a day doing whatever it is that I want to do. My hour long lunch isn't spent sitting at my desk. My hour long lunch is doing whatever I want to do for that 1 hour away from everybody.
Good for you.
Right. So even now, like in the middle of the day, I'll sometimes be like, I'm going to go have a bubble bath just because I can.
Yes. Me too.
I have an hour. Like I'm going to go just relax. Right. Or I'll go to the ocean with my kids. We just go jump in the ocean and then come back home.
Like I love it.
My kids are homeschooled. So we get to do stuff like that too. But
how old are your kids now?
My son will be 12 in March and my daughter is 17 in October.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I am all about, I mean, if you have the privilege of working for yourself and managing your own schedule, or even if you're just work from home. Take a moment, do some things that bring you joy,
yeah.
Experience them. And I tend to go to the bathtub when I'm feeling overwhelmed or stressed, or I can't come up with a creative solution to a problem. I'm like, let me just go and be in the water and see what shows up for me.
Isn't that nice?
I love that. Yeah.
Any time of day. That's perfect.
It's beautiful. All right. So Tanya, can you share with us what your favorite charitable organization is to support?
Yeah. I thought about this a lot when I was told that, you know, this would be a question that I'd be asked. Something my kids and I do intentionally is I don't support one charitable organization. I do a lot of different things where I can, but I make mm-hmm. sure that like one consistent thing for me is the food bank. And yes. the food bank for me, the reason that I support the food bank is because when I was really young and had no food, I remember going to the food bank and I was shy about it. I was like, I don't know how old I was, 15, 14, 15, something like that. I went to the food bank, or I must have been 15. And I said, I don't have an address. Like, can I still participate in this? Mm. And she looked at me and she was like, oh my God, you're so little, right? Like, I was so young. And she was like, come in. So normally they had boxes that they'd already have pre-filled for people to take home, but there was so much stuff that you needed to cook that she was like, okay, let's make a box. So she took out all this stuff because I didn't have a way to cook it. And she replaced it with all of these other things that I could eat. You know, I had to get my hands on like a can opener or whatever, but still, I mean, it was processed food. It didn't care. It was nice food. That I had it at all.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then I went back a few more times after that, and they were always so sweet and so kind to me and kind to everybody. Like, that was the other thing. That was my experience with them back in the day. So now, if they're ever a part of my grocery store, which they always are, you know, when you do your groceries and you can also buy $5 or $10 bag mm-hmm. of groceries for a family, every grocery mm-hmm. run we do, we always purchase them when they're available. And then of course you do what you can in other ways too for the food bank. But that's,
I love that.
That's one for me.
Yeah. So go support your local food bank because they save lives.
Yeah.
They really make a difference. We have a little free pantry right outside our local library. And inevitably, it gets filled in the morning and it's empty by the end of the day. It's actually a really interesting conversation. So one of my neighbors said, why don't we each take a day of the month and we make sure we fill it that day? That way, at least we know once a day it's getting refilled. And we've been doing that for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years now. But I had a conversation with somebody several years ago. This was so interesting. And she said, I wouldn't want to put food in there. What if somebody took food out of there who doesn't need it? And I said, who would take food out of the little free pantry that doesn't need it, even if it's because they're mentally unwell, right? Like, I wouldn't take food out of the little free pantry, mm-hmm. right? You know, if you take it, you need it for some reason or another.
Yeah.
And I just choose for that not to be my approach to life. My approach to life is I would rather give something to somebody who doesn't need it anytime, any day. Like, I would rather free a guilty person from prison than put an innocent person in prison than to hold food back from somebody who doesn't have access to it.
We also have to remember how many people live in their cars
yes.
who have jobs, right?
Yes.
How many people who you would never know by looking at them, you know, that they need support in this way. I made sure in my life that you couldn't look at me and see one piece of my childhood on me. That was a decision I made at like 15, 16 years old. Yeah. You would never know sometimes. So sometimes it might look to you like, you know, that person doesn't need it. They probably do. Yeah, you're right.
They probably do.
Yeah.
Don't judge. It's, I mean, it's an amazing rule to live by.
Yeah.
All right. So Tanya, I know that the summit is over. Can people still access it?
Yes, they
can.
If
they want to?
So if you publish this episode before Monday, which I'm not sure you're going to be able to do that.
We're not, which is why I'm talking about it as if it's past tense, because it's not going to air until the middle or end of October.
Okay.
So let's pause for a second so my editor can go back.
Oh, okay. One way that people can always find what's going on with me or, you know, what kind of show I'm holding or what I'm involved in is just to go to my website, tanyadubay.com. So it's TANYADUBE.com. And I always have that page forwarded to the latest thing. So all of my summits, my 5-day summits or my 21-day summits or 3-day summit, they're always going to be around money mindset, mindset for entrepreneurship, personal development, sales, all of that fun stuff, because
all the good stuff.
You know, I love helping heart-centered entrepreneurs move themselves forward. And I think this group needs as much support as they can get. And that's why I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. And I love that you do the summits and then they're available later for people who want to gain access to them.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. Tanya, will you share your 3 words with us one last time?
Yes, I can. It's possibility, courageous, and resilient.
I love them. They're 3 magical words that I use in my life and in my coaching practice all the time. So super resonated with that. And you know, often I take this opportunity to ask people to expand on their word choice, but I feel like everything you said fully embodies those 3 words in such a beautiful way. I'm so honored and grateful that you chose to spend some time with us here today. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so happy you asked me. This is really nice. Thank you.
Yeah, it was so much fun. All right, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. It is an honor and a privilege every episode to get to share with you another person who is out revolutionizing everyday bravery. It looks different for each and every one of us every minute of every day. And I want you to own your brave, because just like celebration and gratitude, the more brave you own, the more brave you'll be. Until we get a chance to talk again, this is Heather Vickery reminding you today and every single day to go out and choose bravely. Bye now. You've been listening to The Brave Files, stories of people living courageously. Visit us at thebravefilespodcast.com to learn more about the show, find our show notes, and access full episode transcripts. And we'd love to know what you think of the show. We invite you to connect with us via Instagram and send a DM. You'll find us at The Brave Files Podcast on Instagram. Our music was created and produced in a custom collaboration with Matt Lewis from ML Creative Consulting, a boutique firm dedicated to helping clients identify their unique sound and amplify their brand with custom-delivered soundtracks. Special thanks to everyone on Team Brave, from our audio engineer to our producers, associate producers, copy editors, writers, and support team. The show wouldn't exist without them, and we are eternally grateful. I'm your host and executive producer, Heather Vickery. Thanks for tuning in.